It is 12:08. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Good afternoon to you. This is John Williams, and we are downtown Chicago. The Wintrust Business Lunch comes your way weekdays from noon to one. Just a quick mention, I could not help but think about all of the business being lost this weekend when I was downtown Chicago. It is the weekend that summer starts, and it sure did feel like it, didn't it? And you could not be near the lake or along the river in Chicago and the new river walk. You could not go up and down Michigan Avenue and not literally see all of the business not being conducted. I don't know what the total numbers are for any given weekend, but this Memorial Day would have been a really busy, profitable weekend for a lot of people, for a lot of businesses, and that money was not spent. I was able to dash in and out of a Dairy Queen. That was our idea of spending this weekend. And yet you've got all of that beautiful lakefront, all of that beautiful riverfront, and for obvious reasons, all of that still closed down until starting maybe on Friday. They'll start to trickle open. But summer is underway in Chicago, and ever so slowly on Friday, we'll start to get more of a taste of that. Look at what the market is doing today, too. Up over 600 points last I looked at the Dow. Steve, what are you seeing?
Yeah, it's up currently, I think, 661 or something like that. Let me get the latest number. 662, yeah.
Wow, fueled by...
Raytheon is doing very well today. So is Goldman Sachs. Actually, Walgreens is up. I don't have the number here, but that's contributing to the growth as well. JP Morgan Chase is up. Dow Inc. is trading in positive territory, all fueling the rise in the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Hmm. Yahoo Finance says stocks are jumping today, not only for those particular corporate reasons, but they say an effective coronavirus vaccine, the hopes for an effective coronavirus vaccine are fueling optimism over updates around states reopening and better than expected new economic data. Some of Steve's numbers. Each of the S&P 500 and Dow traded above 2% shortly after the market opened. These are the highest numbers we've seen since mid-March, and June is right around the corner. John Najarian watches these kinds of numbers and visits with us Mondays on WGN Radio at marketrebellion.com. John, read into the... No, it's Monday. Pete just whispered in my ear.
It feels like a Monday.
I'm sorry, it is Monday. There's only two kinds... I was thinking about this the other day, John. There's only two kinds of times now. Nighttime and daytime. After that, it's a wash. My mom said to me over the weekend, she goes, is today Memorial Day? I said, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. So happy Tuesday to you.
Happy Tuesday to you, John. Thank you.
John, what's your elevator speech on the markets? And then we'll pick up this conversation in a minute. But what are you thinking about all of these indices today?
Sure. I think Steve nailed it. It's a lot of the results of hard work by a lot of technologists and others that are working on some sort of a vaccine or cure for corona. And it's also the flood of Americans back into places, even if the states haven't fully opened, America is opening back up.
So if businesses, small and medium and large, start to prosper because more people are coming out, then... the market's going to react positively, even though that's just so funny to me, John, because if that's part of this, haven't we learned this lesson a million times over that these markets sort of anticipate the economy, but they don't tell you where the economy is right now? These businesses are not going to flourish anytime soon, right?
Well, for instance, Tillman Fertitta, the chairman of the Houston Rockets, the owner of the Houston Rockets and chairman of Landry's and a whole bunch of restaurants across the United States, he worried just a couple weeks ago on our air on CNBC, what if we reopen and nobody comes? I think the answer and part of the reason for the optimism today is it's pretty clear. If you open, they will come. People were flooding into anything that was open. over the weekend across the United States. Even friends of mine in California, where the state was supposed to be closed, especially San Diego, it was raging. And that's, I think, what a lot of us would expect is that after the 1918 Spanish flu, we had the roaring 20s. I think we're about to hit the raging 20s here in the United States and around the world.
That could be a double-edged sword, though, right? I mean, if you're concerned we're only the economy, yeah, that might doom it as well.
Right. I mean, there are going to be challenges with that. And, you know, everything from the epidermal effects of everybody rushing out from inside to outside in the sunlight and all of the sunburn to all of the fear of some of the virologists that this thing could have a second wave. And if it does, are we sparking it? But mostly, I think Korea actually published, the CDC of Korea published that they show zero reinfection. And I repeat, zero. That was a big finding over the weekend because people had worried, well, can you get it again? Turns out now, at least based on their CDC, and they've been pretty widely touted, that if you have it once, that's it for corona.
Maybe for an individual, we'll pick it up here in just a minute, but what's happened in Italy proves that a country can have a surge a second time. And so let's do what's best for the economy, but what that is maybe not so easily answered. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. It's 12:18. By the way, a little later on, Amy Guth talks about what Let Us Entertain You restaurants are doing, a COVID surcharge on your restaurant bill. We'll also talk a little bit about how attire is going to be changing in the workplace going forward. That is, if we are all not going into the office, maybe we're not going to buy so many shirts and ties and sport coats. What does that mean to the fashion industry? The trickle down is fascinating, isn't it? Even if it's terrifying or troubling to some businesses. Maybe it is better news for the people that make business casual clothes and they'll prosper. But nobody saw this coming and everybody is scrambling to adjust. We're talking to John Najarian. John Najarian from MarketRebellion.com, financial news, education, and subscription site. John, any sort of observations from you along those lines? I mean, it's real estate, it's fashion, it's COVID surcharges on restaurant bills. It's some kinds of foods prospering and others not. It really must have been almost impossible for businesses to plan for something like this, or even as it evolves, to know which turn it's going to take next.
Very true. And I've been listening to a lot of podcasts with scientists, John, about whether or not the lockdown itself even worked. I mean, we know the main purpose of the lockdown was to flatten the curve so that we wouldn't overwhelm hospitals. But beyond that, there is no benefit to the lockdown beyond that. Unless you just said, we're going to keep everybody inside until there's a cure. And that hasn't been stated by any government anywhere. It really is something that is just destroying economies around the globe. And that's why you're seeing so many of them reopen, because the risks of that are far greater than the risks with the disease, especially at the as virulent as it is. It is not killing as many people as was first feared. And now it seems that there are a lot of folks that are 118 different companies that have COVID vaccines in the works right now in testing. And some of that good news you talked about at the top with Stephen, and that's all good news. So we hope that happens soon.
S&P's up 56 points. The Dow's up over 600 points. The markets are doing well today. Is the summer usually a less busy, a less volatile time for the markets?
Well, so far the sell in May and going away would have been a big mistake. Granted, May isn't the summer. Most of us would say June, July, August are the summer, but it usually slows down somewhat in the volume of trade. The markets could still be volatile during the summer, and that's under normal circumstances, when the trading desks get a little thinner from people being out at vacation spots. But right now, it's going to be very reactive to either rumors or factual outbreaks. And again, rumors could be just as detrimental as an actual outbreak, at least in the short term. Mm-hmm. So people are going to be watching that. And then they'll be watching to see exactly how well those that do reopen, especially since we do have this dichotomy of some states are reopening and reopening very fast, like Georgia and Florida, Texas, and so forth. And some states like ours are keeping a lot of it locked down. But as you probably noticed, too, I noticed they tore down the barricades to get to the lake this weekend, at least up here on the near north side. And previously they had cops on horseback keeping people from doing that. And this time there were no police there to stop that.
On the near north side, what beach are you talking about? I live near the lake.
Oak Street Beach.
People, you saw people on Oak Street?
Oh, yeah. I saw, because right where I was, I live up by Lincoln Park Zoo, and to keep people from getting to the lakefront, they had put zip ties on metal gates mm-hmm. and snow fences and the like to keep people out of basically that South Pond area leading over to the lake, and they tore those fences down. Now, I don't know if they were replaced overnight, but those fences were torn down and people were heading out that way and riding their bikes up and down the lakefront in that area. Obviously, I don't know how far down they could go or how far up, but I saw them up as far as Belmont on bikes. And I think a lot of people are very frustrated by the lockdown. And I would think that when they finally do some polling, Pritzker is not going to be faring well with this.
Maybe a business doesn't need 100% of the state's population to patronize it to make it back. If there's, say, pick a number, 25% of the people are willing to go back to the beaches and the restaurants and the bars and the stores, maybe you only need a lot of the 25%. And so if the rest of the state judges those people as crazy, that may not matter to the businesses that will happily take the business of the crazy people, crazy in quotes, the people that are mm-hmm. more willing to come out, not just to a beach, but maybe into a restaurant, into a bar, into a store. When I watched the video of what happened over the weekend, like you said, San Diego, Florida, the Lake of the Ozarks, New Jersey, I don't think Chicago's any different than that. I suspect we have people just as eager to get out and maybe spend money.
Exactly. And I didn't need to go any further than Indiana to prove your theory right. I went to Indiana a week ago, and the stores were all open. Virtually all the stores were open. They had opened the previous Monday, and I went on Friday and Saturday. Stores were open. Buffalo Wild Wings was packed. The restaurants were supposed to be holding it to 50%, but some of them had gone way over that. Mm. And the grocery stores, Lowe's, Menards, I'd say maybe 10% had masks, but it was not required. So we're going to see a big difference of how different parts of the country deal with this and how much their economies come back, because quite frankly, it does come down to economics. I mean, every state is running out of money at this point. I mean, California went from a huge multi-billion dollar surplus to now being at deficit spending. We've been at deficit spending forever here in Illinois. And if you can't pay teachers or anybody else that work for your state, firemen, policemen, and so forth, because you simply do not have enough money coming in, the federal government can step up and provide more, but it's not there yet. And I think a lot of these, I mean, look at O'Hare. O'Hare is a multi-billion dollar revenue producer for the city of Chicago, much lesser extent for the state. When you have the flights cut back as far as they have been, that's a huge loss of income to the state, to the region, and so forth. So the good news is, John, a lot of that's coming back. TSA numbers over the past 3 weeks have tripled as far as numbers of people coming back and getting on planes. But the load factors are still very down versus what the airlines would need to survive.
You were describing the scene in Indiana, and a lot of our listeners told us about what they saw in Lake Geneva in Wisconsin this weekend. And some people are cheered by that, and other people are appalled by that. Stocks jumped, we mentioned earlier, and the S&P 500 have been trading at their highest level since March 5th, as the hopes of an effective coronavirus vaccine combined with optimism over updates around states' reopenings produce better than expected economic data, that from CNN's business page. They are also citing that some of the countries that are opening up, it's a global economy, right? And so if some of those places are back in business, maybe that buoys stocks a little bit too, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been so many folks in the service industry in particular put out of work that I don't know how much longer they can maintain without basically rebelling against this. And I think in some cases, the things you and I saw, whether it's in pictures or in person, are exactly that sort of frustration, rebellion, whatever you want to call it, with the policies that are in place right now. And I think that states that don't provide better opening schedules are going to find themselves behind the eight ball instead of being in a position to take advantage of it. People will just go to those other states.
CNBC reported.
I don't mean moving, but I mean they'll go there and spend their money. I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying that this weekend, saying, I'm going to Indiana to spend my money since Illinois won't take it.
I guess so. I mean, one wonders how long that'll last. That is, Illinois is going to open up soon and will be the beneficiary of those dollars in time. But I guess you can, if nothing else, use that as an example of how much pressure is put on a J.B. Pritzker, right? You're going to lose with Wisconsin and Indiana having a party.
Oh, yeah. And, again, ultimately, these are politicians that usually try to get reelected. And you're not going to see people happy with, I mean, I saw Gretchen Whitmer's husband had tried to get their boat onto the lake over in Michigan, despite the fact that she had a shutdown order in place. And, of course, those famous scenes of protesters on the state capitol grounds and all that. And I think that is just the beginning. You're going to see a lot more of that. And, you know, Governor Pritzker has his own issues with his family traveling on the jet and going down to Georgia or Florida or whatever like that, when he's telling the rest of us, wear a mask and stay in. That dog doesn't hunt.
Some of the biggest gainers, CNBC said, were directly tied to the reopening. Carnival shares were up 11%. MGM Resorts climbed 9%. United Airlines and Southwest Airlines finished the week last week and have opened up well this week, 9% up. So that's
right.
Part of the news as well.
A lot of folks said that people would be very unlikely to go back on cruise ships. And those companies, by the way, do not qualify for the bailouts because they're not flagged in America. They're not U.S.-based companies. But Norwegian Cruise Line, like you say, up 15% today. It was at $7.03 middle of March, and now it's back to $16 a share. So there's a lot of stories like that. Companies that you wouldn't think could possibly come. Six Flags, they're reopening Oklahoma by the end of this week. Their resort in Oklahoma. I don't know when the one in Gurnee is scheduled to reopen.
Yeah, that's something for us to look into. John Najarian, founder of MarketRebellion.com. Okay, it's Tuesday, John. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for the reminder of that. It's good to hear your voice. Dow is up 670 points. John Najarian was talking with us about why a moment ago. It's not only the virus and optimism about finding a cure, but also some pent-up demands from the consumers out there and some companies with some pretty good earnings reports. Let's talk about some specific companies in Chicago. One of them is a Thai bar. Catherine Davis is an associate editor at Chicago Inno. Let's start there, Catherine. I hope you had a good break. Are you well today?
I am. Doing well, John. How are you?
Real good, thanks. I'm so happy to see Thai bar is one of the stories we're going to discuss. I have a couple of Thai bar shirts in my closet. I did not even know that was a Chicago-based company.
Yeah, Tybar, definitely based here, founded back in 2004. So, you know, really interesting to kind of watch their growth story, you know, from a small local-based company now to, you know, selling shirts and other garments around the country and the world even. You know, we wrote about them last week, kind of just highlighting how they've pivoted, you know, amid coronavirus and even in a larger trend of, you know, more casual dress at the office. And then also, you know, now that people are working from home, maybe they don't want to be wearing sweatpants every day, but Tybar offers, you know, casual, work-appropriate garments that, you know, you'd feel comfortable wearing on your Zoom calls.
And they started out as an accessories company, right? Pocket squares, tie bars, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And then they kind of expanded. They have a wedding service now. Like we were just saying, they, you know, sell a number of shirts. I think we reported that they offered just 11 styles of shirts in 2016, and now they offer more than 100 different shirts, which is kind of crazy to think about. But, you know, all of their garments come in kind of fun, fresh, modern styles, really kind of bringing a new sense of style to workplace attire.
The company's headquartered in Chicago. I assume the shirts are made elsewhere, not in the United States?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually not exactly sure where they're manufacturing, but I don't believe it's in Chicago.
They make it look easy, though. You say, oh, well, that's a cool tailored shirt that's not too dressy, but not too casual either. It's that niche, and they seem to have nailed it every single time.
Absolutely. I mean, even like celebrities like Dwayne Wade and Neil Patrick Harris have been seen wearing their clothing. So, you know, that's just kind of a testament to, you know, how fashionable it is and approachable even to some of these young stars.
And the thing to say about them right now is that they are positioned to capture more of the market, a business market that previously they weren't perfectly suited for, but maybe the market's coming to them now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I think part of this is just that, you know, even in my own workplace, there's been a shift to more casual clothing. People, you know, now we're comfortable wearing jeans into the office, you know, still wearing maybe button-up shirts, but not necessarily like a jacket with it. And I think Tybar fits kind of perfectly into that niche of, you know, changing attire trends in the workplace.
Another story that you reported on last week was a company called Neopenda. Is that the Chicago startup that I'm reading about?
Yep, Neopenda, that's right.
And what does Neopenda do?
Yeah, so, you know, they're a Chicago startup founded in 2015, and, you know, they started out making neonatal vitals monitors for babies in developing countries, particularly in regions of Africa that don't have reliable electricity. And so the idea, you know, is these vitals monitors, they are worn around babies' foreheads, and they track things like respiratory rate, pulse rate, oxygen saturation, and even temperature. And it's a way for, you know, babies to be monitored kind of remotely. So the idea is that the vitals being taken from the device are sent to like an iPad or some other kind of tablet or device where a nurse can monitor a baby's symptoms and vitals and intervene if, you know, something looks off.
So the idea is they could use some of that technology for the entire population?
Yeah. So now they're kind of repurposing that product to use for adults suffering from COVID. You know, so the idea is that since a lot of our healthcare facilities are, you know, kind of overpacked right now and doctors are being stretched very thin, these monitors, you know, now being made for adult sizes, can help monitor COVID symptoms. So, you know, something like monitoring respiratory rates and oxygen saturations is really important if you have coronavirus, since this is a respiratory infection, right? You know, so this allows the nurse's station to monitor these patients kind of all at once on one screen, and they know, you know, which patients need to be seen first based on what the vitals are telling them.
The city of Chicago is partnered with a startup to help people acquire PPE. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes. So this startup, they're called Reaply, and it's founded by a Northwestern grad who kind of started this startup when he was in college. And, you know, the idea at first was to be recycling and sourcing unused items in, like, scientific labs, even office furniture. But now they teamed up with the city of Chicago to help source personal protective equipment. And the idea is to, you know, get this kind of equipment in the hands of local nonprofits and businesses as the city gears up to reopen after the COVID crisis. You know, so they are helping source protective shields, reusable face masks, and hand sanitizer.
I wonder if the issue for people now, businesses, everybody, is not does the stuff exist, but where is it? What's the best way for me to acquire it? Have we had enough time, do you get the sense, to ramp up production? And now it's a distribution issue as much as anything.
Exactly. And that's kind of what the Chicago PPE market aims to do. It also aims to get these, you know, small business owners PPE at cost-controlled rates. You know, we've seen in the past, especially when the crisis first began, there was some price gouging on face masks, hand sanitizer, and other equipment. And, you know, the city and Reapley, their mission is to really ensure that people get access to this and also at an affordable price.
Real quick, GearFlow wins the Northwestern University's 2020 VentureCat. Here's another Northwestern. Was this a student that did this?
Yeah, so this was founded or co-founded by an MBA candidate over at Northwestern's Kellogg School. And they won first place and $150,000 at Northwestern's VentureCat. So this is an annual student startup competition, goes on every year. And it's usually like a pretty big deal. I mean, some really great startups have come out of this. You know, even just this year, the keynote speaker was Sam Shank. He's the head of hotels at Airbnb, also a Kellogg alum. So, you know, interesting to hear from these kind of people and the advice that they give to the students. You know, specifically with GearFlow, basically what they've created is an online construction equipment marketplace. So, you know, if you need to find you know, easy to find construction equipment, you can use the service and get connected to manufacturers pretty quickly.
About that. Boy, who knew? It's 1242 on WGN, and Catherine Davis is an associate editor at Chicago Inno. Okay, Catherine, until next week, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, John.
Appreciate your reporting. It's 1242 on WGN. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute. Here's Steve Bertrand.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Let us entertain you. Restaurants are adding a 4% pandemic surcharge to your bill. They're calling it a necessary step because the survival of their business is at risk. A Chicago startup that specializes in recycling and sourcing unused items like scientific equipment is teaming up with the city to help source PPE for local nonprofits and businesses. Chicago Inno says the city says Reapley will help businesses ease back into the workplace. And you know those team-building escape rooms that have been popping up? People work together to figure out how to get out. Well, people aren't together working much these days, so a Chicago entrepreneur's developed a digital version. It's called Operation Mindfall Remote. So now you can sit at home and learn about your coworkers' weaknesses. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, let's continue. Back to you, Steve Bertrand. What have you got?
Market's doing 80 miles an hour today. The Dow's up 675, the NASDAQ up an even 100, and the S&P 500 up 58.
Don't tell Orion Samuelson I was speeding. I don't get the feeling Orion would cotton that very well. Oh, what have you got for us?
Well, I've got a little higher grain market today, but I begin by reminding you that we will get the planting progress reports a day late this week because of the holiday yesterday. So this afternoon, the Department of Agriculture will report planting progress, which so far is running ahead of average and running ahead of last year. So we'll wait for those numbers. Meanwhile, the market firmed today on some Chinese sales reported, soybean sales, imports to China. The sales reports that are both going to China, 66,000 tons of soybeans to China, and then another sale of 198,000 tons of soybeans to China. And then a third sale to China, but this one is soybean meal, and they're not really sure it's China, but generally when they say unknown, it turns out to be that. 216,000 tons of soybean meal in that sale to unknown destinations. Undergraduate students at the University of Illinois will have a new undergraduate measure to involve themselves in. That announcement I talked about a little bit this morning, but they have a new degree that is called the Metropolitan Food and Environmental Systems, and it'll focus on establishing better food systems for a healthier, more sustainable future. Feeding the world's future population is a pressing problem facing the planet and its inhabitants. And in response, local food systems emerged quickly in major metropolitan areas with entrepreneuring, investment, and an increasing job market following the movement. So again, Metropolitan Food and Environmental Systems, a major at the University of Illinois. And if you're going to the university, you may want to look into that. Meanwhile, we'll have the planting progress reports this afternoon, and I think we'll probably show we're pretty close to being done with the corn planting and a little farther away with the soybean planting, but that'll be out this afternoon. That's your Money on 720 WGN.
Reporter Amy Guth joins us to follow up on some other stories in Chicago, including what's going on with Let Us Entertain You. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, John, thanks so much. You know, I thought this was an interesting story. And so Let Us Entertain You Restaurant's president, R.J. Melman, said that, you know, they've been hit in three main directions. They've had, you know, the closures that have dropped their revenue. They've had a lot of expenses providing PPE for workers, carry out and delivery containers, things like that, sanitation practices. And then also the third piece of that is, here they are absorbing greater increase to food prices since the 70s. That's the boat that a lot of restaurants are in. So what Lettuce is doing is they've said they're going to add a 4% surcharge to delivery and takeout orders. They're kind of calling it this pandemic tax, right? This pandemic charge. Now, however, as he noted when he announced this, that if customers really felt strongly about it, they felt like that wasn't fair, they didn't want that, they would be willing to remove the charge, no questions asked, but for now, that's going to be a default on the bill, and that's going to be 4% of the total.
So if I protest and said, I don't think that's fair, and by the way, who does that? But okay.
I know.
There's a couple people that might, then they'll say, okay, don't pay it. It sort of reminds me of when sometimes bands will put out an album and they'll say, give us what it's worth. I think under these circumstances, boy, this is my editorial, that's a reasonable expense for the consumer to bear. But if I didn't like it, then they would take it off.
That's right. And he said, no questions asked, they'll take that off. Some other restaurants are kind of experimenting with that in other markets around the country. Some are even reporting that they're just changing their menu prices to kind of absorb these costs and to offset some of the lost revenue. They're just increasing the menu price. This is the route, though, that Lettuce has done. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw this from a lot more restaurants moving forward.
Had to be tempting to them to just go ahead and bury it in there somehow. But that might be difficult to do, right? You would then have to raise the menu price of everything 4%, say, or some items 4 or 5% to cover the cost. Now you've restructured all of your menus. I could see how that would be complicated. So to be transparent, they're letting you know right now it's going to be an extra 4% for delivery.
That's right. Another thing that I think might be a bright light for restaurants, who knows, it'll kind of wait, we'll wait and see. In the legislative session, there was approval for now you can buy a mixed drink. You can say, hey, I'm going to order some dinner to go, and with that, I would like a Manhattan or whatever, and you can pick that up as long as it's in a sealed container and you transport it if you're driving in a place that's not accessible to you, the driver. So, you know, that maybe is a, like kind of a lifeline, a little bit of a bone that's been thrown to restaurants. We'll see between these two things if restaurants can't recoup a little bit of their lost revenue right now.
Amy, now the restaurants are able to open up Friday in a limited way outdoors. Will this apply to at-restaurant outdoor dining?
Yeah, I mean, so this Mayor Lightfoot, pretty quickly after Governor Pritzker gave that May 29th number, Mayor Lightfoot came around and she said, well, you know, that's not a magic number. Here in the city proper, we're looking into June. Hang on, you know, I think we've been tuning into her daily press briefing to learn more about exactly what that date's going to look like. I think it's going to be limited capacity and a lot more outdoor dining. But it seems like this, you know, now that people have built that habit of ordering and picking up food and not necessarily dining out, I think that'll be a lifeline for restaurants for a while, especially because you can open a restaurant, but until people feel really secure about going there and dining in and all of that, I think there's still a lot of unknowns.
To that end, you sent us a MarketWatch story by Nicole Pesci that says in mid-April, more than one in five U.S. adults said they had food delivered, up from 19% a week before. And I don't know what it was a year ago, but I'm really surprised to hear. I would be shocked if it was anywhere near that number a year ago. One in five people had food delivered last, you know, on any given week. What was the time frame in mid-April?
That's right.
That strikes me as a lot.
That strikes me as a lot, too. You know, I think a lot of people, I've seen this discussion on a lot of social media channels of people going, you know, what's the best thing? Do I want to put money in a delivery person's pocket and keep them working right now? Or do I just want to go pick up the food myself and cut out one other person touching my food? I think a lot of people are having that conversation, kind of thinking about what that is. But yeah, I thought that was a really surprising number too. That's a lot of people, especially, you know, in the city here, I think it's not as uncommon. Whereas, you know, there's some areas where getting food delivered isn't as common. It's more common to go out or to pick it up and things like that. So throughout the country, all this data was compiled, particularly with the help of Yelp and some of those providers. What I thought was really interesting was they even broke it down, like, what is the most popular delivery order according to each state? And you know what? It's not what I thought it would be. In Illinois, it was thin crust pizza. I figured we would go Chicago deep dish. Not at all. Deep dish happened in Ohio, but here in Illinois, it was thin crust. Across the border, up in Wisconsin, it was pad thai, poke bowls in Indiana, and then in Michigan, bubble tea, which is not even something I would think about getting delivered, but there you go.
Bubble tea in Michigan. I saw Iowa. They've got burgers, which is, again, I guess everything is different now. I mean, you don't normally have burgers delivered. You have pizza and Chinese food delivered, but everything's getting delivered these days. So it's burgers for the people in Iowa. The bell rings again at the New York Stock Exchange. The floor is reopened. What are you hearing about the business at the NYSE?
Yeah, so I thought that this was really interesting to me, and I've been watching it this morning of just kind of what does that look like? And I mean, the New York Stock Exchange is just such a crowded and chaotic place. We all kind of have that image in our head of just kind of a lot of shouting and a lot of people crowded together. So there's a lot of safety protocols. Your temperature will be checked before you go in. Fewer traders on the floor at a time with some social distancing. They've been asked not to take public transportation to and from work. You know, all the other stuff that we keep hearing, social distancing and hand washing and masks and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think it's really interesting because this is the first time this morning that it has been open since the middle of March. And, you know, for kind of perspective on that, the last time that was closed was for 2 days during Hurricane Sandy in 2012. And then before that, it was around the time of the September 11th attacks. Prior to that, it was the last time was when Apollo 11 landed on the moon in July of 1969. President Nixon decided to give the entire country a day off and close the New York Stock Exchange. So this is just how, you know, just a look at like how uncommon that is. Of note, though, in 2015, the New York Stock Exchange was closed for a couple of hours. There was a technical glitch. A lot of people thought it was some kind of hacker, but it wasn't anything malicious. It was just a technical glitch. But other than that, I mean, we're talking about very big events that have closed the stock exchange. So, you know, this is it's not insignificant that it has been closed all this time. And, you know, there was a lot of reaction on the markets today about, you know, optimism of a vaccine and some states beginning to reopen that, you know, we have to watch that. It changes so much. I mean, the markets move so quickly right now that we, you know, I think if you look at it 1 hour, look at the next hour, it could be completely different. But I think it's really interesting just to see like how they're thinking through doing that sector of work right there on the New York Stock Exchange floor, you know, at this time.
I hadn't even, you know, we follow the Dow, we follow the indices. I did not notice that they weren't trading on the floor. And if we needed more evidence that this is a pandemic, that this is unique to the globe, There's only, what, seven times that the floor of the New York Stock Exchange has been closed, or the exchange itself. And they are those sorts of world-shattering events. For a period of time in World War I, Charles Lindbergh's parade in 1927, JFK's assassination in 63, and as you mentioned, Apollo. So this is right. Not that we didn't know that, but this is right up there with those kind of events. That's for sure. Amy Gooch.
Yeah, indeed.
Good to hear you. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, John.